The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. Whatever stage your business is at, there's always time to imagine sustainable, positive change. AIB, for the life you're after.
Well, a long way from Venezuela. I'm thinking of the opposite of what was happening there last night when it comes to an island off the west coast of Ireland and a business that has really tapped into, in many ways, that sort of cosy, curled up, hibernating mode that we may well have all enjoyed over Christmas. And it's something that's central to the business of my next two guests, Ruairi and Marie Trace de Blackham, who have travelled here today by boat and across land from Inishman, where they run Inishman Knitwear. And their work has been described as art, the most remote luxury brand in the world, and cult-like by the Financial Times. Ruairi and Marie Trace, you're very welcome to the programme and thanks for making the journey. I might start with you, Ruairi. First of all, you grew up in Inishman. What was that like?
It was very nice. I mean, looking back at it growing up there as a child, it was, you know, for the adults, it wasn't much fun. Because, you know, I grew up in the west of Ireland in the 1970s and early 80s, where it was pretty poor, you know. And I suppose the knitwear business that my father set up came out of the necessity to provide employment on the island for young women, because there was plenty of jobs for the boys there, building roads and bringing electrification to the island and all that sort of stuff. So as a child, looking back on it, it was absolutely wonderful because it was idyllic, it was quiet. And
What was the house like?
Our house, well, our house is kind of different to most other houses in that, you know, most other families on the island grew up in a house that was pretty much based in agrarian, like, you know, there would have been farming and fishing and so on. And my father came from Dublin and he married my mother, and it was more, you know, we didn't have land, we didn't farm. It was more about setting up industry and creating jobs that way.
And was it a sort of a cold, windy spot in the winter, I'd imagine? Still is, but back in the 70s?
It's a bit like this morning. Good weather for selling sweaters.
You wake up with a smile on a morning like that, do you? But your mother's family have a long history back on the island, don't they?
They do, yeah. And it's just, again, and that's the company and what we do is kind of steeped in the history of the island and the traditions of the island and so on. You know, it's just, it's a very, very special place. Now, it's not for everybody. You know, it's quite rural. It's quite, it's not as cut off as it used to be. You know, now you have three flights a day and two scheduled boats a day to get in and out to the mainland. And you've cargo coming in two or three times a week, weather permitting. Now, this time of the year can be challenging, but, you know, it's a far cry from the Nevania parking a couple of hundred yards offshore and guys rowing out in Corachs to bring in kegs of Guinness and, you know, Tasha the Chacht.
And that did happen. It's not just a sort
absolutely.
Of a Guinness ad situation.
I grew up with that, you know. And you were lucky this time of year. You were lucky if you had one cargo boat a week, a month sometimes. You know, it could go a long, long time without getting any sort of communication. But it was different. It was long.
Things were fairly basic.
Things were basic. It was long before the time when, you know, it became sexy to be, you know, to have your own polytunnel at the end of your garden and have your own chickens and pigs and whatever. People were actually self-sufficient. They could go weeks without without getting groceries from the mainland.
Had you electricity at that time when you were a kid?
I mean, I went to bed with a candle till I was about five or six. Now, we were a posh house. We lived in the schoolmaster's house, so we had, there must have been gas installed in there at some stage. So there was the little gas lanterns in the kitchen with the mantle, and that you'd have to be careful in putting it in and so on. You know, so it was like, it was very different.
Washing machines, all the mod cons.
That was the first thing, I think, that came to the island once the three-pin plug arrived.
The washing machines were in straight away.
Yeah.
And Marie Therese, you grew up in Middleton in Cork, and you had an interest in the Irish language.
I did. I went to secondary school through Irish. Randomly enough, my family wasn't from a particularly Irish-speaking background. But I had a cousin who was a teacher in this school, which was about 20 kilometres away. So I ended up there because I liked the feel of it. And I suppose through one thing led to another. I had an interest in doing something creative. And in sixth year, a character visited our school. I say a character because he was a bit of a visionary academic, Finbar Bradley, O'Rody. And he just was, he had set up a degree in entrepreneurship through Irish and DCU, which was very unusual at the time, still is. And he just kind of sparked, you know, excitement and curiosity in a few of us in the school in Glenmark, Lush and Fearsig. So thoughts of architecture and other things were sidelined, and off a few of us went to this following this character to Dublin.
And it's interesting as you describe it, because a lot of people might have been interested in entrepreneurship, but the Irish part of it might have put them off if they didn't feel confident enough in their Irish. But it sounds, the way you have it, that the Irish aspect of it was the draw, and it was about entrepreneurship after that.
It was a very interesting course. It was a Bachelor of Science in Finance, Computing, Enterprise and Foreign Languages through Irish. So, you know, it took a particular type of character to go, oh, that sounds interesting. And the Irish was just one part of that. I suppose I knew two things growing up. I knew we both come from households where our parents were self-employed or at least our fathers. And so I knew I wanted to have my own business, and I knew I wanted to do something creative. So the degree in entrepreneurship ticked that. And I just kind of thought, OK, well, if I do this degree in entrepreneurship, I can add the creative part later on in some way.
So where did you meet this fellow then?
In first year in that course in DCU.
Love at first sight.
He was behind me, so I didn't see him till afterwards. But apparently, for him, I think, and then I turned around, yeah.
Was that your recollection, Rory?
Yeah, I was. Yeah. Go along with that.
But you did date for a while, and then you drifted apart reconnected again.
Yeah, well, Rory was a chef before he came into that course as a mature student, and he basically continued to chef full time in Dublin. I think it was, in his case, it was a bit of FOMO 4 years after leaving school, already with a good career behind him, knowing he wanted to have his own business also, a restaurant, thinking, okay, well, let me do this entrepreneurship course to see what I'm missing, are there skills there I need? So he did it, got his skills, and then there was a break then. And but we reconnected in fourth year, and
How did you find him when it came to reconnecting? Did you know where he was?
I was doing my third year work placement in Paris, and we never had a fight as such. We just grew apart, I suppose. But I kind of thought, we never fought. You know, he's an interesting character. And I sent a postcard from Paris, and I, you know, we were both moving around the world at that stage. I didn't know where he was living, but I knew he'd go home sometime. And in Inishman, it's so small. It's like 180 people. Everybody's address is your name, Inishman, Aran Islands, County Galway. So I just sent him a postcard from Paris, and the rest is history, I suppose.
And you would have actually struck up together again, but it was long distance for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I'd done 4 years university in Dublin, and I, being from Cork, a lot of my friends stayed in Cork for college, and I just felt I wanted to go back to Cork for a couple of years. So I went out to Inishman the summer after fourth year, worked in the knitwear company for a summer just to see, I suppose, was this anything for the future, with Rory potentially in that location, and said, okay, yeah, maybe. So went back to Cork, and then we did 6 years between Cork and Inishman, which might not sound like much because they're both in Ireland, but I had a friend living next to the airport in Dublin, going out with a guy living next to the airport in Boston, and on a Friday bank holiday they could see each other quicker than we could, Cork to Inishman. So it was quite a trek. So we did that for 6 years, and I suppose basically those 6 years I worked hard. I travelled the world for work, for pleasure, scuba dived all over the place. I did all the stuff I knew I wouldn't get to do having moved to Inishman and starting a business there.
Sure.
Yeah.
And Rory, that Irish language connection that you both shared, but in your case you'd gone to school in Dublin where you would have been taught secondary school through English, although Irish was your first language. What was that like?
It was a bit of a culture shock at the start. I suppose on the island when I was growing up, there was no secondary school at the time, so the only option was to go away to boarding school. And my father was from Dublin, and So most of my friends would have gone to Jarlath's in Tuam or Mary's in, or somewhere in Galway. But it made more sense for me. Two of my mother's sisters lived in Dublin, and a couple of my mum, my father's brothers and sisters still lived there. So, and my grandmother still lived up the road. So it was, it made more sense for me to come to Dublin.
Was that a nice connection with home, going to see your grandmother up the road?
It was, yeah. It was, there was, she lived up in Foster Avenue, and she had a big house with about an acre out the back of it. So I used to joke, you know, I'd go up for the Sunday roast, but there was no such thing as a free lunch because you'd be given the lawnmower first.
And what was it like going to school in Black Rock with a lot of English-speaking Dubliners and you, an Irish-speaking Islander?
You know, the funny thing was, you know, there was, the boarding school was kind of different. There was about 30 or 40 kids in every year. And there were people from all over the place. There was lad from Abu Dhabi in our class. There was guys, expats, like people whose parents wanted to send them back to Ireland for whatever. There was people from Cork even. people from all down the country. So the borders kind of stuck together and we were all kind of fish out of water. So
did you end up teaching them Irish? No.
No, I didn't, no. The only time I came into play was coming up to, there was one of the lads who never grew up with Irish because he was from, he grew up in Yemen or somewhere, and he had to get this Irish essay done for the Leaving Cert. And he said to me, Rory, he paid me a few bob, and he says, will you just write me a one-size-fits-all Irish essay that no matter what the title that comes up is, I want 3 pages of gobbledygook that will actually get me over the line.
Do you remember what it was?
I can't remember what it was, but it, he wrote that. He wrote that one anyway, whatever it was.
So he would have just learned it off by heart.
Exactly.
And off he went. And then you decided to do chefing, and you were interested in that whole area.
Well, I suppose I fell into that by accident. I went away during transition year. I went away to Germany to learn German, and I fell, because my father used to do a lot of business at the time in Germany, and Düsseldorf was at the time was the capital of, it's moved to Berlin now, but it was the capital of the fashion. There was a trade show there which they used to do, and he had an agent there based in Düsseldorf, and he got me a job in his beautiful old brasserie on the Königsallee, which is the main drag in Düsseldorf. And I kind of just ran away with the circus, really. You know, I just fell in love with the razzmatazz of working in a restaurant. And it was a big brasserie-style restaurant. And it was just, for a 15-year-old, going off to Germany on your own, kind of going, this is it. I didn't much fancy going back to school after that, but I was dragged back, kicking and screaming.
And was it always in your head that you wanted to get back to Inishman? And you know, you had the idea of doing the Inishman Suites, which was accommodation and restaurant. But was that a big long-term plan, or was it something that just
I suppose it was brewing over a while. And when I left school, I spent a couple of weeks down in Cork, in West Cork, with a guy called John Desmond. He's a little restaurant out in Hare Island. And I kind of was thinking, yeah, geez, I should maybe consider doing something on the island at home. And this was about, and then another 10 years passed. I'd been away to Italy and so on and so forth, and I came back and I'd seen the agriturismo model that they do there on various levels. It can be on a very, very high level, or it can be, you know, quite rudimentary if you want. But I thought that that model would suit itself to not only the west of Ireland or an island, but rural Ireland. So I decided to kind of do, I was looking to do a restaurant in Dublin at the time, and we looked at a couple of places. But even then, in 98, 99, I remember looking at buildings because we wanted to own the bricks and mortar. Myself and another guy were looking at it, and it just didn't make sense. I mean, for the kind of money that I would spend in Dublin, I could build and own a place myself in the Aran Islands.
You know? You decided to do it that way. Marie-Thérèse, do you remember, you mentioned about your first visit to the island. What was that like for you?
Well, my very first visit was actually in first year in college. Because Rory was on the course, entrepreneurship through Irish, a course trip to Inishman became very relevant and easy to facilitate, and a visit to the knitwear factory. So that was my first trip, and I still remember that boat trip distinctly. Just this feeling of, even though it's only 45 minutes by ferry, it is the open sea, the Atlantic. And I distinctly remember that trip going, wow, this is not the mainland. This is a whole different ball game. And it really is, you know, even though we have 3 planes and 2 boats most days of the week, you know, in the last month, there's been 5 days probably with no boats and planes, and it's the day you're meant to go into Galway for our team Christmas lunch, and we all got stuck in Galway, you know. So it's very much, even though it's much there are so many more conveniences.
I'm sure you struggled through it.
Yeah, we struggled through it.
And when you decided to move there and you were going to set up the restaurant and do everything, what was it like when you first arrived and say, this is it now, this is home?
Yeah.
Did you know many people there?
It was tough. As I said earlier, I was trying to get all my living, a lot of my living in before I moved to the Aran Islands. So I came off the back of a 4-month trip to South America, ending in our wedding in Brazil in December 2006. And very bad planning altogether. I moved to Inishman in January 2007. I wouldn't recommend moving to the Aran Islands in January.
After 4 months in South
America. After 4 months in less.
Slight culture shock.
So Rory was with me on the mainland, very romantically did our first domestic grocery shopping, went to the butchers, the fishmongers, had a little car full of lovely things, and we couldn't get to the island for 3 days. So, you know, that was a bit of a baptism by fire. But, you know, to be honest, it was a shock. We are both very independent, and those 6 years of distance relationship, we only saw each other once a month and maybe 4 times a year in Inishman. I was barely there at all. And anytime I'd go, it might be a weekend, there was plenty of young people. I arrived in January, there was nobody. There was no woman 5 years either side of my age. So it was a kind of what have I done moment. But we opened the Inishman restaurant and suites that July. And, you know, we were very busy. We were building, we were planning, we were marketing. And so that helped. And then once the summer months rolled in and we opened the business, it, you know, it took on its own world, its kind of main world.
And that restaurant business, Rory, was 16 years you ran it for. And it was a fascinating kind of idea and a brave idea in terms of having a high quality restaurant on an island, 30 miles off the West Coast. And was it something that you were sorry to see go when you decided to end it?
Yes and no. I suppose it. When I moved back to the island first, it took me a long time to get. I moved back in 2000, and it took 3 or 4 years to get planning permission for starters, and then, you know, jumping through hurdles. And I've kind of fell into the family business, so I became a kind of a traveling salesman for my father in the couple of years where we were trying to get the thing off the ground, and then in and out involved in the knitwear business over the years that we were running the suites. And then our children came along and it became obvious that we couldn't run a couple of businesses. And then COVID hit and we were all kind of sitting around discussing the elephant in the room. And that's kind of when it went on to, we kind of stepped into the knitwear business.
What you've done with the knitwear business is really interesting, because you're out there in Inishman. It's very much a high quality, high end product, an expensive product in many ways. A lot of cashmere, a lot of very high quality material stuff. But you're selling it all around the world. I mean, you sell in a lot of very prestigious places in America and Japan.
Yeah, I suppose when I tell people who don't know anything about what we do, and we're a very, very small business, and when I tell people that, you know, we produce knitwear in the Aran Islands, I suppose they think I'm making souvenirs for the tourist market or something, that, you know, to dress people and make them look like badly dressed Clancy brothers and send them on their way. But that's not what we do. And I suppose my father started the business and that's kind of what they started doing. But it came apparent very early in the business that it would be, you know, he couldn't compete in that market. It was, that's kind of stack him high and sell him cheap kind of a thing. So it has always been, since the early 80s, an outward looking company. Based in design and so on. So we invested quite early in a designer, in machinery, state-of-the-art machinery, and invested in going out into the world and finding those markets and building a brand that could command a price for a quality product that was made in the EU, made even more importantly, made in the Aran Islands, which has a heritage of knitting and so on. So to be able to say that, you know, you see Italian brands kind of starting off from nowhere and making up a story, we have a story there to back it up. So from a sales point of view, that's kind of very interesting.
And do you end up travelling a lot? And what's it like to run the business from the Aran Islands?
Well, when we stepped in the second time round, our mantra's been, I suppose, when we took it over in 2023 in very, very good shape. It was still a very good company, but it was 12.5% online and the rest was wholesale. And we were kind of going, this still involves an awful lot of trekking around the world, selling to people, and that's not the kind of what we want to do. But we also had a look at that business, and it's kind of a business that's, you know, you're selling to big boys. A lot of the small guys in that business area are getting chewed up because they can't, you know, pay the rents on the high street anymore. So finding small boutiques that you used to sell to traditionally. So we decided, okay, we're going to flip this around from being a 12.5% company, retail company, to a 12.5% wholesale company, roll on Mary Trays. And she's very much pushing the online thing, and she's taken that, and that's really where we are now. I mean, we've gone past 50% of turnover as part of our retail at the moment, and that's really her work.
And as someone who has such a heritage on the island and a family heritage there, I mean, for example, you have a photograph of your granddad, isn't that right? There's a photograph.
Who showed you that?
An old photograph of your granddad.
Oh, there is a photograph actually of, and I only found that out recently, there was an exhibition of John Millington Synge's photographs at the turn of the last century, like 1900, say, on the beach over in Inisir. And there's a picture of this man and a woman with a couple of kids walking down the beach. And my mother said to me, do you know, that's your great-grandfather.
A great-grandfather.
And that's your grandfather who came over to Inishman, married my grandmother who's from there.
And that was taken by Synge?
I think so, yeah.
Wow. And how important is it for you then to be able to maintain that business from a place with such heritage?
Well, it's huge because it's a beautiful place to live for us, and we really like being able to live there. It's kind of like travelling without moving. I always say, you know, you get to be out in the world, like in next week, or yeah, next week we're going to Florence, for example, to do a trade show. So just because you're there, I mean, we still are always going to keep a wholesale part of our business, because it means it opens you out to the world. You can go out and meet customers and like-minded people, and that, to bring that back to the island, you know.
That's the meaning of real variety, from Florence to the Aran Islands, Kerry. It's been fascinating talking to you, and thank you very much for coming over, and safe journey back and everything, and the best of luck with the business. Rory de Blackham and Marie Trays de Blackham of Inishman Knitwear.
Thanks, Richard. Thanks very much.